listen, we need to have a reading on the fundamentals. And the problem with Venezuela right now is that it's extremely difficult to get a handle on what's going on. With them running out of resources to pay the debt, the question becomes, at what point do they stop servicing their indebtedness? I mean, this is a country that is close to starvation. Imports are down by 50%. For now, they seem to be able to figure out a way continuously to find the dollars to pay the debt. I don't know for how much longer.
Tokyo's trains and subway are notoriously crowded, so looking at a potential million visitors coming into the city for the 2020 Olympics, the city is planning a radical change. Today, it's trialling Telework Day, which encourages commuters to work from home to help ease the congestion.
The U.S. government is banning Americans from traveling to North Korea due to the serious risk of arrest after a U.S. student was jailed and later died after visiting the isolated nation, the State Department said Friday. The ban will go into effect in just over 30 days. A State Department spokeswoman says it plans to publish a notice in the Federal Register next week, starting a 30-day clock before the restriction takes effect. After that, Americans who want to travel to North Korea for certain limited humanitarian or other purposes will have to apply for a special passport to do so.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's July 24th, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and the start of another business week, another business day underway for a lot of folks already at their desks this morning. We're glad to have you here at our desk this morning. We've got a lot on the program a little bit later on. Rumblings are growing louder that Foxconn, the company that puts together all of those iPhones for Apple, may be headed to the Midwest. Dale Buss, a contributor at Forbes and Chief Executive Magazine, has been doing some reporting on this, and he's going to join us a little bit later in the program to talk about it. It would bring potentially hundreds, if not thousands, of jobs to wherever it is located. One of the rumors, one of the reports, is that possibly it will be Wisconsin, maybe even southeast Wisconsin. So we'll talk to Dale a little bit later in the program. Our CEO spotlight's on the way. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, on the world markets, Asian shares meandered today as market attention turned toward the U.S. Federal Reserve meeting later in the week. Japanese shares languished as the yen strengthened against the dollar. This morning in the U.S., stock futures are pointing towards small opening gains on Wall Street. Dow futures up 26 right now. NASDAQ and S&P futures are up just single digits. Back to Asia, the Nikkei a little bit higher, lower this morning, off almost a half a percent, down 124 points. Hang Seng is higher. Shanghai is higher as well. European markets are all generally lower. The FTSE is off almost a full percent. The DAX is off a half a percent. In France, the market is down by about a third. Oil is at $45.80 a barrel, which is up just a fraction of a percent. Some news that we've been following for you this morning. There could be some new developments coming on the health care debate this week, with a vote possibly tomorrow. We've been hearing that the president may actually make a statement on the health care debate later in the day, possibly around 3 o'clock Eastern time. What he will say, we don't know, but there could be a vote on this tomorrow in the Senate, so we'll keep you posted on that. Also this morning, a closely watched survey shows that economic activity across the 19-country Eurozone cooled slightly in July, but remains at relatively high historic levels. And with this story involving airlines, three U.S. airlines have agreed to each pay hundreds of thousands of dollars in fines to settle government claims that they violated rules aimed at protecting consumers. The fines have been levied against American Airlines, Delta Airlines, and Frontier. The government says American failed to make timely refunds to passengers, and Delta underreported the number of mishandled baggage complaints it received from passengers. In our CEO spotlight this morning, the business of public relations, and we're happy to have with us in the studio Noreen Herron, the president and CEO of the Herron Agency here in Chicago. Noreen, good morning and welcome to The Opening Bell.
I'm so happy to be here, Steve. Thank you.
Well, we're happy to have you. We haven't touched on PR yet in our CEO spotlight, so we're extra happy to have you in for that reason.
Well, I'm so pleased to be here.
Talk to us about your agency, Herron.
So we've been in business for 17 years. I started my agency right after serving as the PR director for the Hyatt Regency Chicago, which is Chicago's largest hotel and Hyatt's largest property. And I left to start my own agency, and we're based in Lincoln Park. We're a lifestyle communications firm. I have a great team of people, and we primarily service hotels, theaters, restaurants, events. We just did the Race to Mackinac this past weekend. We've done the Taste of Chicago. We rep all 49 Massage Envies in Illinois. So we're in this lifestyle communication space.
You mentioned the Race to Mackinac. I don't know if you saw the video of the boats coming in with the northern lights over the bridge early in the morning. That was quite a scene. Have you actually ever done the race? Have you been on one of the boats yet?
I have not done the race, but I've been there with the camera crews as we're filming, and certainly I'm glad that you saw that visual, because that's what a PR agency does, right? Yeah, we were there making sure that the camera crews were all covering both the departure and then the arrival in Michigan, and working with the Michigan press there as well.
Would you describe the agency as a boutique agency, or is it above that, a couple of notches above that?
Yeah, I think people use that term boutique often meaning small, and we have a team of 10 people. I think boutique can also mean that you're in a certain category. And certainly I do think that people primarily think of us for hotel, theater, restaurant, but we've done nonprofit, we've done hospital groups, sports teams, we've done PR for a wide array of different organizations.
What are the challenges, and how are they different in lifestyle public relations to, let's say, you know, the public relations most people might think of with, you know, the news, the hard news that we see on a day in and day out basis?
Yes. Well, I think you have to really love the category, because it involves a lot of early morning press interviews, both on the TV and radio side. And then quite often you are at a press opening in the evening with a show, let's say, that has a curtain at 8 o'clock that comes down at 10:45. And then as a publicist, you're staying to take pictures of the cast. And then you want to get those pictures out right away, so you know you need to be into work again at 6 a.m. the next morning to get them out. So it you have to find people that have a passion for food and live theater, and because otherwise it could feel like a real grind. And I think that's where my team, we're all very passionate about what we do.
I think you could twist my arm. I would come and work for you in a second. These are all of the fun things that sort of make the culture of a city, though, aren't they?
They are. They are. But they're important. I can't underestimate how important reviews are to a chef, to the entrepreneur opening the restaurant, to a cast, to the producer, and the pressure that's involved in that, and making sure that all of the right critics are there, and getting as many critics as we can for an opening, how important it is. Because in Chicago, it's a very competitive market. There's over 7,000 restaurants. There's over 300 theater companies. So when a show opens, as a public relations agency, we need to make so much noise so that people get out their credit cards and buy a ticket or get over to that restaurant. And so the amount of amplification with marketing and PR and social media that we need to do is very large.
And I would imagine, too, part of that challenge, because this is a big media market, too, is sort of corralling all of the different types of media, too. How challenging is that?
Well, it's interesting. We're always trying to find new bloggers and websites. And as you well know, I mean, local. There's been a lot of local newspapers that have unfortunately gone under. In the world of TV, there are not as many on-camera reporters as there used to be. Certainly on the feature side, there's not as many. So you're right. It's always looking for new ways to get the word out. And we try to do that in very creative, non-traditional ways, where we might work with a health club or we've worked with American Express and Visa and other platforms to try to help us ramp up for a new client.
So when you mention like Visa, for instance, once in a while I'll see them offer like if you sign up today or part of the deal, if you're one of the members, is you get this. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
Exactly. And that just really takes organization, because as soon as we know we have a new client, we want to make sure we're right there talking to our Visa and American Express rep and seeing if we can push our client, because I was talking to a friend who's a producer at a TV station in Chicago, and she said she was out for the day, and she got over 600 pitches in her inbox. So you're competing with 599 other publicists on any given day to get your story on the air, and it's very challenging.
I would imagine so. I mean, we get some of those pitches here, too, and you really do have to have something that cuts through all of them to make it to the top. How do you do that? I mean, is it writing? Is it presentation? Or is it just always going to be sort of the content that the star of the show is this and here's how you present it?
Well, that's a really good question, Steve. I think, number one, we don't take every piece of business that comes in the door. In fact, we probably don't take about 40% of what we get calls about. We want to make sure that the organizations that we work with are of a very high quality and caliber where we feel that proud to represent them and where we really feel that we can go out to a press person and say, this is worth your time and your coverage. So that's number one. Number two, once we've identified that it's a good partnership, then we try to look at it as creatively as possible. We are an agency. We say we're not spin doctors. I know sometimes people think PR people are. We're not representing tobacco or alcohol. We're in this feel-good category. Live theater makes everyone feel good. A great meal at a great restaurant makes everyone feel good. An overnight at one of the hotels that we represent in Chicago, fabulous. But we like to think we're an agency that has staged a lot of large-scale publicity stunts. And that's not a bad thing. That's just a way to get a lot of attention, a lot of eyes on your client on any given day. And it's kind of a risky endeavor because you've got to tell your client, look, you've got to do something totally crazy and out of the box. And here's what we're recommending that you do. And we have to just hope that the media will want to cover it. And we have to hope that there's not any major breaking news on that day, because that can obviously kill a publicity stunt very quickly.
Right. Something jumped off of your biography on your website, because we do, obviously, this is a business show. We like to deal a lot with the economy. But in your biography, it says, when done right, publicists keep the economy moving. I never thought of it that way. Explain what that means.
Well, we're so important to the process. I think that sometimes people have this idea that publicists are simply people that take RSVPs. And when you're a good publicist, you are a business influencer. You are a matchmaker for your client with the business community. So we are not only trying to get our client press, and I've been the first one to say, even though I'm a publicist, I don't know that always just publicity is enough. It's the matchmaking that you do in the community. We've represented medical practices where, yes, we got nice TV and radio and print coverage, but more importantly, we went out to people that were referral sources and directly and said, can we do meet and greet nights with the physicians on staff and these referral sources that have led to new practices being developed? And that's a really powerful thing. And as a publicist, it feels so good when you're able to make the phones ring, or you find out that, you know, they couldn't keep up with the demand. We once represented Bettinardi Golf, which is an upscale golf putter company based in Tinley Park, and they had never used a PR agency before. And it's a wonderful story that these golf clubs are milled here in Illinois. And that's what he said. I literally could not keep up with the business once I started with you. And that creates more jobs. And that's just a wonderful feeling to make an impact that way.
You know, and Chicago has always been good at this. City Hall, whether it have been under Mayor Daley or now Mayor Emanuel, they've recognized how important these cultures are to our community. The Mayor Daley made sure we had the entertainment district. Mayor Emanuel's keeping that alive. Seats, butts, as they say, butts in seats means the economy, means somebody's got a job and there's that revenue coming in. So it's important for a city.
Well, Steve, I always look at it this way, and this is what I tell any new team members, is if you think about the economic ripple of, if we get someone to stay in a Chicago hotel, they may go shopping along Michigan Avenue. They may take a cab somewhere. That helps the cab driver. That they may go out to dinner. That helps the waiter. And just that impact of one stay. And I think because I started my career as an in-house publicist and I could see how my work directly on property would help in terms of sales, I just think it's a real feel-good career. Honestly, it's been very positive, obviously, for me.
You have mentioned something called influencers. Am I thinking that the influencers that you deal with on a daily basis are the reporters and producers, or these other people that you deal with on a daily basis?
Well, influencers, that term has morphed into so many things now, because certainly it's press first and foremost. But now there are people, obviously, that have large social media platforms that where people follow them. I also think influencers can be matchmakers in the community where, you know, we are able to, one thing that we do for our theaters, if we have a production that we think appeals to women, we might go to Lululemon and to the regional director of marketing and see if we can get posters in all the Lululemons. That's going to help enormously. So I guess I use that term influencer as it may be that director of marketing who helps spread the word for us and evangelizes for us in that way.
Yeah, and social media is obviously a big deal too. I know you have mentioned you still work a lot with local media, but how big of a deal is social media now, and how has that changed the PR landscape?
Well, it's huge. It's especially on the restaurant side, because as you can imagine, a visual at a restaurant for someone who has a large following is just incredibly huge. I know myself, even I've seen pictures and thought, oh, I want to go there and experience that myself. And it's amazing now where we rep a lot of rooftop decks in Chicago, and we'll see in the feed like, wow, we just opened this new one and there's 400 people just yesterday that posted pictures from their, because there's nothing like a picture when you're on Instagram of a rooftop deck.
Right.
But that's changed. It's changed so much because it, you know, when I started my career, and I've been doing it for a long time, you did rely on four stations to tell your story and two newspapers to tell your story and a handful of radio reporters to tell your story. And now it's opened up that whole, again, influencer pool much more so.
I bet you have some really good stories to tell about some of the people that you work with. Lots of personalities, I'm guessing.
Well, I've repped a lot of celebrities throughout my career. As a young publicist, I remember I was so intimidated because I represented Sammy Kahn, Frank Sinatra's songwriter. But I've had the pleasure of representing Jerry Seinfeld, Fleetwood Mac, the Beach Boys, Michael Feinstein, and I always have said that the bigger the celebrity, usually the nicer and easier they are to work with. But having said that, I started my career at a theater called Candlelight Dinner Playhouse. I started there as a sophomore in high school. I fell in love with live theater. And first and foremost, for me, I'm more proud to rep any Chicagoland actor than I am any celebrity, frankly. I have so much respect for what they do.
If there's somebody out there listening, if there's a couple of somebodies out there listening who are thinking, I want to do this someday, what would your advice be?
I would say find a mentor, do as many internships as you can, read as much as you can because you're learning beats of reporters, listen, follow the media, and I think smile a lot, frankly. It's all about feeling of I can do this and I can make that happen. A publicist is truly a person that has to really have this dynamic energy of I'm going to make this restaurant or hotel or this theater, I'm going to make it a hit here. I'm going to make the noise. And you have to have that feeling of smiling through it and that you absolutely can do it.
And when it doesn't work, too, I bet you that's the other side of this, isn't it? If you have something that you put your heart into and it doesn't work, what advice do you have for people who deal with those kinds of challenges?
Well, we have had that because certainly we've opened various venues where we thought, my God, this is fabulous, and for whatever reason it didn't get good reviews. And that's always extremely hard. It always is going to go one way or the other. And that's, you don't expect it usually to go to the negative. But I will say that we've been fortunate in that our clients have always said to us, even when things didn't go well, it was not for lack of your agency trying, because there's so much effort and so much results. And it's the old, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink sometimes. For whatever reason, it just doesn't work sometimes.
Yeah, I bet you've been watching, too, the recent, over the last 6 months, high-profile incidents of cringeworthy events in public relations, big companies that have made missteps. When you see those things happen, are you yelling at the television like I would imagine you might be saying, that's not how you do it? Or it's a big deal when you see somebody stumble like that in a big way.
Oh, Steve, all the time. And yelling at my TV would be a good way to put it. But I will say that whenever I watch those types of experiences on TV, I think no one operates in a vacuum. You get these large corporations and someone is making a bad decision and usually telling a publicist, this is what you're going to say. A publicist usually knows, I shouldn't say no comment. And they don't do that in and of themselves. I mean, and that's where I think the publicist sometimes is a real scapegoat, because it's especially in these, and I won't name certain companies, but you watch how there are these missteps and someone is directing all of that. And there may, and maybe it's someone who's not a publicist. Maybe it's a CEO, someone who has no experience with PR, that thinks it's better to not talk or better to say no comment. And I think most, even a college PR student, I think, knows that that's not the route to go.
Yeah. And it must be intimidating on some levels to go to a CEO of a big company and say, you're making a mistake here. Have you had to do that? And what does that feel like?
I have had to do that. And unfortunately, you're at the mercy of your client in those cases. And sometimes you have to say, I don't want to be a part of this. But I think that's the interesting thing about agency life, because I had always been an in-house publicist, and I get to see from the inside so many different cultures. We have 35 clients right now, so there's 35 different cultures, and every culture is different, and the way that each hotel approaches, for instance, you can look at, just to give an example, the way Trump might approach PR at Trump Hotels is much different than maybe some other hotel groups, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to align yourself from the beginning, I think, when you're beginning a relationship with a client. Do I think that I'm going to be in alignment with the way that they are going to practice their PR? And so sometimes I have from the beginning said, I'd like to start from a place of where I'm going to feel comfortable going into it. And that's through the years. I think we've always come from a place of integrity and making really we've always been solid. We've never left a bill behind. We're a very solid agency that has always delivered solid results.
It speaks volumes too about putting your own integrity above. I mean, you don't want to sell out your own integrity for somebody else's, basically.
Well, that's right. And personal integrity is important too. And that's what I tell my team. I don't ever want them to feel compromised. If there's a situation where they have to take the fall because a client made a bad decision, that is very impactful on their career, and that shouldn't happen. And so I think from the beginning, as I said, it starts with forming the right relationships, getting the right clients from the beginning. So,
if you had to look into a crystal ball, where do you think PR is going to be in 5-10 years?
I do that all the time because I'm forecasting, yeah. You know, and I will say, particularly for my category, I'm very nervous because with our world and all of the uncertainty, I think about 9/11, and I flew to Dulles. I was one of the first people to get on a plane because the Hyatt Dulles was at 3% occupancy, and we didn't know what to do. How will we recover from this? And should there be anything like a terrorist attack again, the first thing that impacts are hotels and theaters and restaurants, because everybody's staying at home. And so I do think all the time about where we are and where we'll be going. I think in the future, obviously we can see the proliferation of social media is huge, and I think there'll be new vehicles. And I think people are getting tired of even what's existing right now. I think that's why Instagram started my story to follow Snapchat and what will be the next thing. But obviously, I think, and I was just talking with one of the major critics in Chicago, the importance of criticism and professional criticism is in jeopardy right now. And for me, who knows so many professional critics who have honed their craft and studied through the years, it's a little bit sad that you can do that and then someone who is a Joe off the street who happens to have more followers than you has more impact is a little bit scary. And I think that will continue, and what will that mean for professional criticism will be a challenge.
Do you think there will always be people involved in your profession? We hear a lot about artificial intelligence and robots taking over. I can't imagine what you do being done by a robot.
Well, thank you. I hope that is the case, Steve. But you're right in that I do think a lot of, obviously, crisis communications, we're always going to need people to handle that because it's a touchy-feely situation. But I think in general, PR and representing brands and getting a feel for a brand and being able to communicate that, I don't think that a robot could do that. I think we very much so when we're starting with a new client and we go in to experience it ourselves, we are kind of looking at what is the story and what is unique and what's different. And I think there's always going to be a role for a publicist with that.
Noreen, best to you, and thanks for coming in and being on The Opening Bell.
Thank you, Steve.
Noreen Herron is the president and CEO of the Herron Agency in Chicago. We're going to continue our conversation with Noreen after the bell and post more of our talk on the podcast of The Opening Bell a little bit later this morning. You can find it at WGNradio.com. And you can find more about the Herron Agency online at Herron Agency, H-E-R-O-N Agency on Twitter, and HerronAgency.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. Glad you're here for our Monday edition of The Opening Bell. Foxconn Technology is looking at several states as a potential site for a new plant. Wants to announce the first match very soon. The company, which makes the iPhone and other electronics, considering investing in six projects, looking at seven states as candidates, including Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Texas, and Wisconsin. Dale Buss is a contributor for Forbes magazine and also Chief Executive magazine. He's with us this morning. He's been doing some reporting on this. Dale, it looks like someone in the Midwest is going to be very happy. Those are a lot of states in the running.
Yeah, it definitely seems to be a Midwest phenomenon. And because everybody's kind of tight-lipped about this, nobody's quite sure why. It may have something to do, A, with the fact that the Midwest helped elect President Trump, and he's made a lot of noise about wanting to make sure that companies from all over, including China, do their part to increase American jobs. Also may have to do with the fact that the liquid crystal display panels that Foxconn apparently would make at this plant can use a lot of water in their manufacture. So obviously that suggests a Great Lakes state. But as you said, they've kicked off quite a derby. It kind of reminds me in some ways of some of the big economic development prizes, you know, the last generation or two. Like you may remember what states were willing to do to try to get the Saturn plant from General Motors in the 80s. Sure. It ended up going to Tennessee, of course. And then more recently, there was the Gigafactory, which Elon Musk is what Elon Musk calls his battery manufacturing plant, which four to six states were in the running for that huge project, and that went to Nevada.
Well, Dale, what is the prize here? I mean, it's going to be a plant, obviously, that makes electronics, probably components for the iPhone. How many jobs are we talking about? What kind of size and structure are we looking at?
Well, it seems to be maybe this facility would be from 5,000 to 10,000 jobs, and Foxconn CEO Terry Gou, pledged to President Trump that he would probably put as many as 50,000 jobs in the U.S. in the next several years. But the implications of this plant, you know, go beyond just those 5,000 to 10,000 jobs. First of all, these are advanced manufacturing jobs. There's heavy automation involved. There's a lot of need for engineers and skilled workers, you know, way beyond the capacity maybe of some of these states even to have people available at this point. So it's really going to shake up the economic ecosphere of whatever state this plant lands in. Another aspect is that Foxconn would probably bring a lot of supplier jobs with it, because none of these states, maybe the exception of Texas, has the kind of infrastructure for supplying these kinds of jobs that might be required. And then the third thing that's being shaken up is the financial structure of states. I mean, both Michigan passed a huge new incentive program aimed at companies, that would bring in a lot of jobs, up to $200 million in financial incentives. And Wisconsin's trying to figure out how maybe they could put together what they're calling a Manhattan Project-style, sort of crash effort to get enough people qualified to take on these advanced manufacturing jobs if Foxconn comes.
Yeah. The armchair quarterbacks in several states, I'll pick Wisconsin as an example because Southeast mm-hmm. Wisconsin is one of those places that's rumored to be at the top of the list. They're thinking that if they locate this close to a metropolitan area, like, for example, Chicago or Detroit or one of the other big cities in the Midwest, that might actually help them pull some of those jobs in. Is there some validity to that?
Well, yeah, I mean, the number of jobs we're talking about here, obviously the supply of labor, you know, particularly in a place like Chicago could be a huge draw. So you could see, you know, there have been journalists in Wisconsin looking at flight manifests and watching airports and stuff for comings and goings by governors and CEOs, and it's all become, you know, great intrigue. But the fact is, if the Foxconn plant landed, say, in Racine County, just north of the border there, you have a huge draw from, you know, northern Chicago and that environment to these kinds of jobs. And even though it doesn't seem that Illinois maybe is hard in the running for this because of, you know, the fiscal problems and really lack of ability to come up with incentives, it could have a huge impact on the employment picture, you know, in Metro Chicago for sure.
Dale, talk to us a little bit about how badly something like this is needed. We've seen many people refer to us as the Rust Belt. Some of the employment situations are not improving, at least in manufacturing, as we'd like. So this would be a big deal for some of these states, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be a big deal. I mean, in this economy where you've got essentially full employment everywhere, it's, you know, we know living in the Rust Belt that that moniker long ago has become outdated. So the need for jobs per se at this moment isn't maybe as great as the long-term effect that a Foxconn plant, you know, would have on a region where you could, you know, you could be a Wisconsin or a Michigan or even a northern Indiana and kind of pivot from that traditional reliance on, say, automotive or heavy machinery manufacturing, that kind of thing, into a new, you know, digital era footprint of a very advanced company that's huge in digital technology all over the world. And so it would kind of be an economic transformation prize over the long term as much as it would be a short-term jolt for employment.
One of the other things that I guess we'll be watching, a couple of indications that I've seen is that some announcement is going to be happening maybe this month. There's just a few days left this month, so this could be an imminent announcement, couldn't it?
Yeah, it does seem imminent. There's a possibility this month or people talking early August. Of course, Foxconn, you know, is not an animal that people in the U.S. are used to dealing with. And a few years ago, the company said it was going to be putting a facility in Pennsylvania that would produce several hundred jobs. Never happened. So, you know, naturally, governors have their prestige on the line. State budgets are on the line. There's pretty high stakes involved here as well as high intrigue. So it'll really be interesting to see what actually happens.
All right, Dale, we'll stay tuned, and we'll bring you back on when this happens to talk more about the decision. Dale Buss with us this morning. You can follow him on Twitter at DLDBuss, a contributor for Forbes magazine, Chief Executive magazine. Thanks, as always, for being with us, Dale.
You bet. Thanks.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 5:53 on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Dow futures are pointing negative now, off about 16 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are negative as well. Gold is trading higher. Silver trading higher as well. Now the latest on agriculture and more commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we start this trading week, eyes will be on the cattle market at the Mercantile Exchange following the report of cattle on feed as of June 1st, last Friday. The number of cattle placed on feed came in 16% above a year ago, and that was well above the high expectation of an 8% increase. So the initial reaction to that cattle on feed report Friday, bearish. So we'll wait and see what happens there as the cattle market ended the week with a little bit of strength ahead of the report that came out after the market closed on Friday. In the hog trade, weaker cash and wholesale pork prices, along with technical selling weighed on lean hogs at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. And we saw the lean hog contract down 40 cents a hundredweight for the October contract. Cattle, meanwhile, up slightly, but we'll wait and see what happens today. Weather again weighed on the market on Friday, as weather conditions indicated that maybe we'd be able to produce more than expected, and so there was downward pressure on the market. As we look ahead to this week, county fairs time again. We've got two county fairs close into the Chicagoland area this week. the Lake County Fair at Grays Lake and the DuPage County Fair at Wheaton. Time to go to a county fair and enjoy that corn dog and the sweet corn ear. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Monday, July 24th, 2017, the National Association of Realtors releases existing home sales for June. Also, Alphabet reports quarterly financial results. It's going to be a busy week for earnings. Tomorrow, Standard & Poor's releases the Case-Shiller Index of home prices for May. The Conference Board releases the Consumer Confidence Index for July. Federal Reserve policymakers begin a two-day meeting to set interest rates. General Motors, Caterpillar, McDonald's will all report quarterly financial results before the market opens tomorrow. And Chipotle Mexican Grill will report earnings after the market closes. Today, Jared Kushner will testify before Senate Intelligence Committee in a closed hearing on the Russia investigation. And the summer weeks chug along, the AAA is expected to report a jump in gas prices, especially heading into the Labor Day holiday. That report coming out today from the AAA. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Monday, July 24th, 2017.